Our help is in the name of the Lord.
Who made heaven and earth.
So good morning to you and happy St. Patrick's Day.
Good morning.
Today is the patron saint of the diocese. So I don't know how the diocese works that in. Although it has the rank of a feast. In our diocese, in San Francisco, it's a rank of a solemnity. So I suppose they celebrate it either Saturday or Monday when it falls in on Sunday. However, we're not going to celebrate in that sense, but we're going to celebrate by reflecting on Tool 59 of St. Benedict's Rule, which says, do not gratify the desires of the flesh. Terence Cardon's translation puts it, do not carry out the urgings of the flesh. Desideria carnis non efficere. So let's look at the Latin. Desiderium is longing, wanting, but it also, interestingly enough, has the sense of loss. I think that's interesting. In a sense, when we think about the desires of the flesh, and we get the word desire from this, you know, desire never fulfills. Even in its best sense, in the sense of at least our bodily needs, we can be fulfilled after a meal, but we know it's not going to last. That desiderium comes from the verb desidare, to feel the want of something, or to miss something, or to long for something. And as I say, to lose in the sense of casualty. So, you know, to lose soldiers in battle, or to lose something it's a casualty. You lost the house because of bankruptcy, or efficere, the verb in this sentence, means to accomplish or bring about or to make or to cause in the sense of cause and effect. So putting this all together, I've translated it, do not bring the longings of the flesh to effect, meaning don't fulfill them in your deeds. Well, this is actually, this tool, 59, is a direct quote from Galatians, from chapter 5, verse 16, where St. Paul is telling the Galatians, live by the Spirit and you will certainly not gratify the desire of the flesh. While thinking about that, we have to realize who the Galatians are and why St. Paul would say that particular line in this letter to the Galatians. Galatia, of course, is Western Asia, what would be Asia Minor today, or Turkey, the country of Turkey, bordering on the Mediterranean. And the Galatians, it just simply means the land of the Gauls or the land of the Celts. So here you go. We had the Irish there in Asia all along, and you didn't realize it. There was pressure in the Galatian church. They were pagans. They were converts. There was not a history of Judaism in their midst. But, as some of you will remember from your guided reading, there was pressure from missionaries from Judea, Jewish converts called Judaizers, that they needed to take on the Mosaic law for their salvation. And of course, this is where St. Paul got in a big argument with these Judaizers, if you want to call them that way, or that's what they're called in the world of scholarship. And he says, no. He says, Christ and his cross are preeminent, and it's an absolute preeminence. There is no other way to salvation and holiness but through Christ and his cross. It's not the law. And so his stress to the Galatians is on Christian freedom over and above the strictures of the law. For freedom, Christ set us free, St. Paul says earlier in that same chapter. However, St. Paul qualifies that and says this freedom is not to be used as an opportunity for the flesh. In Greek, sarx, and we'll look at that in a moment. And then he goes on to define what the works of the flesh are. Immorality, impurity, licentiousness, idolatry, sorcery, hatreds, rivalry, jealousy, outbursts of fury, acts of selfishness, dissensions, factions, occasions of envy, drinking bouts, orgies, and the like. It's kind of hard to imagine. It seems like that's such a complete list. Why you would add "and the like." But at any rate, maybe you can think of something else to add to that. Then he contrasts what he just said about the works of the flesh with the fruits of the Spirit, so that the Galatians will have a clear idea of the two. The works or the fruits of the Spirit are love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, generosity, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Interestingly enough, he does not add "and the like" to the fruits of the Spirit. But I think we could add to that list easily enough the fruits of the Spirit. Well, St. Paul was very mindful of Sirach chapter 18, verse 30. Do not let your passions be your guide, but keep your desires in check. So this whole word flesh that St. Paul speaks about, both in the biblical and in the New Testament, Old Testament, word is always translated this sarx, this Greek word sarx for flesh. And basically what it comes down to in at least biblical literature, whether it's the Old Testament or the New Testament, is everything that opposes the divine will. And of course, ultimately it can be summed up in self-will. And we're going to see that in a couple, I think two works from now. I think that's work number 61 on self-will. Or maybe it's number 60, I forget. Actually, it's number 60, the next tool for good works. So anything that opposes the divine will is this sarx, or self-will. In the monastic world, John Cashin in his Institute 4, in section 8, says, monks cannot resist the attraction to sexuality if they have not first curbed the will through obedience. It's a pretty strong statement. You know, if we find ourselves grappling with the attraction to sexuality, and that in itself isn't normal enough, but at least John Cashin, at least the connects it with obedience or lack of obedience. You know, that's, like I say, that's a very strong statement. You know, if I can't control my sexuality, basically I'm really struggling with my obedience. But in actual fact, 259 is not about the sins of the flesh, because the sins of the flesh are dealt with in tools 35 through 38. But here, in tool 59, the flesh concerns not a part of the physical body or even a part of human existence, which is sexuality. Here, St. Benedict, at least the scholarship seems to agree on this, and says the flesh means the frailty and the sinfulness of the total person. So here, flesh is just all the things, in one sense, I am born with, in the sense of original sin, and the limitations that that original sin makes on me or forces on me. And so here, flesh is definitely connected to self will. In the Carolingian Benedictine scholar Smaragdus has this to say. He says it's a way of carrying out earthly pleasures, human praise, vainglory, pride, this flesh in the sense of self-will. But we look at step one of humility, and there's a number of points St. Benedict uses to further elaborate on this tool 59 when he says, do not gratify the desires of the flesh. In step one, in verse 12, he says, the monk guards himself from sins and vices of thought or tongue, of hand or foot, of self-will, or bodily desire. Further on in step one of humility, St. Benedict says, we are forbidden to do our own will. And then furthermore in step one, he says this, as for the desires of the body, we must believe that God is always with us. We must therefore be on guard against any base desire. And finally, in step one of humility, St. Benedict again quotes Sirach 18, verse 30, pursue not your lusts. Again, making reference to self-will. So in actual fact, our flesh here is self-will. Do not gratify the desires of your self-will, it could be put, because that's what his implication is with the word carnes or sarx. Amen.